Bang, bang.
Hello, and welcome to Fangbangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Lossie.
And I'm Tasia. This week we are discussing Season 3, Episode 7, Hitting the Ground. This episode originally aired on August 1st, 2010. It was written by Alan Ball and directed by John Dahl. There's a lot of rhyming going on here. It's very suitable of them.
It's like Star Wars. It rhymes. our summary from Wiki. Imperiled by Lorena, Suki goes to extremes in her attempt to save Bill with unforeseen consequences. Sam infiltrates a dogfighting ring to extricate Tommy from his parents' greedy influence. Greedy is perhaps being kind. Jason heads to jail to uncover the truth about Crystal. Obviously, Summer makes a home-cooked play for Hoyt's affections. Debbie vows revenge on Alcide. Eric uses Hadley as bait to get information from Sophie Anne. Russell turns his back on the authority and on the Magister.
Also possibly a bit understated.
I've started becoming sarcastic in my reading of the Wiki summary, so like apologize for Wiki writer for that. First impressions on this episode.
This feels like Stefan on SNL. Like, this episode has everything: shock, peril, comedy, big reveals. Like we're back to hitting the ground running, I think, in this season. It took us a minute to get there, but we're like really in it now.
Yeah, a lot of characters die in this episode, and I'm pretty much happy that all of them died to die.
I can say that I did not shed a single tear for anybody.
No. But yeah, it's, I mean, like, I feel like every podcast episode we open and start by saying, well, a lot of stuff happened in this episode, but like it really happened in this one.
Yeah, this feels like True Blood of old, where you're just fucking like they're throwing everything at the wall and it's just crazy. So it's good to be back.
Yes, lots of insanity. All right, well, let's start our plot off in Bon Ton. With possibly not the most urgent part of the plot, but Jason and Hoyt. So, Summer, who was Bernadette from Big Bang Theory, which is all I remember as, comes over with, I've written scones, which I think is, I meant biscuits, but they're scones. sorry. That is the English boy coming out at me.
Yeah, they are.
They definitely said biscuits. I definitely thought biscuits, and then I realized that I typed scones.
You know what's funny is I was reading over your notes before we did this, and I just completely glossed over scones. I was just like, "Yep, that's right." Scones, slightly savory. Jesus Christ, cousin, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. It's all a biscuits gone continuum. It's just that biscuits are, never mind. We do not have time for all the differences between British English and American English. Okay.
I really love this.
Main problem.
You can go ahead.
No. I want to hear you talk about loving it.
I do. I kind of love this for Summer because I don't know. I think in a lot of these things you'll see like a girl like this do this, you know, bring a boy food or like pursue a boy, but it's understated or it's, you know, it's depicted as like playing games, like trying to make him jealous or whatever. But like I feel like she's just kind of, she shows up and she's like, I'm not here to flirt and like be cute or whatever. Like I'm saying, this is me. This is my pitch. I would like to be with you. I like you. I hope you like me. She just throws it all out there. I feel like that's very self-possessed of her and I respect it.
I agree with all of that with the caveat that the very first line she has is, Can I come in? Oh, no, I'm not a vampire like your ex-girlfriend. Yeah. And that made me just want to stab her in the face
You know, it's funny because she played all of this so well, but that opening line was so bad.
Yeah, it really bad. And Hoyt was like, you're getting off on a wrong foot.
What a
Hoyt.
Way
like,
to,
that was
yeah,
completely
exactly.
missed.
Like in this thing where you're like, clearly you're trying to pitch yourself, like don't bring up, there's no reason to bring up an ex.
No. And but she definitely impresses Jason, which let's just say is not necessarily the most difficult thing to do.
Yeah, it's clearing a low bar. I love that bit of Jason being like, I never thought I was smart enough to get depressed. That's like the guy that you're impressing, but you know, that's a guy who has never been smart enough to get depressed. I mean, like, I wish, right? What would it be, a Jason?
Sadly, he's just, it feels almost like he's a different character each season. Like in the first season, he was a dummy, but like, all right. The second season, he just decided, and then he sort of learnt and developed. And as much as we didn't like Amy, like he did, and it meant something to him, and he grew and he learnt. And then the second season, I still go back to this. I never understood why he was in that church, but like he had that sort of like ability to sort of become more self-possessed, to sort of reject the church, you know, to push back against it when he saw things under threat. And then he has kind of was then just thinking with his dick for like 3-4 episodes at the end of the season. Then he shot eggs, and his reaction to shooting eggs was originally trauma and has now turned into, so I should be a cop, and I'm just like fully lost whatever the fuck they're trying to do.
I feel like that's some very pointed but like unintentional commentary right there. Is that like, hey, I got away with shooting a black man. Seems like cop is the right track for me. It's interesting because he grew so much and through most of season two was like an excellent growth for him. Like he had a really great arc. And then ever since then, he's just kind of been regressing.
But they just also seem to have dropped the whole, like, him seeing bullet holes in people's foreheads thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he was traumatized for, like, 3 episodes, and now he's just changed it into obsession with Crystal. And, like, I just feel like they didn't know what they were doing with him this season, tried something out for 3 episodes, decided for whatever reason that no one was interested in Jason failing to have sex because he saw bullet holes in people's heads and just decided to change his plot line.
Like, I'm not sure
they ever. It's so inconsequential to the rest of the show.
I'm not sure they ever really figure out what they want to do with Jason, because as I sit here right now, like I can remember at least the vague arc of most characters, but I do not remember Jason's from like here on out. Well, except for one thing in this season, but I really don't remember what they do with him, and I don't think that is a very good sign of what's to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, poor Jason. Anyway, because his current obsession is not dealing with his trauma or actually trying to be a proper cop and studying or doing anything, because he's never done anything hard in his life, he's only ever done the things that come easy to him. He decides that he wants to find out more about Crystal. So because she's from a family of meth dealers, he decides all he's going to do is go and buy meth from Lafayette. And Lafayette's reaction is glorious to this.
It's so good. And Jason, like, I told you all that shit's behind me. I just need some meth. It is so, like, the line delivery and Lafayette's, like, just face is so good.
Yeah.
And then Lafayette, like, kind of trying to, like, keep it in. Like, you can see that there's just this, like, equal measure of, like, I'm so sick of fucking Jason's shit and also just, like, humor an amusement at this. Like when he's all, God damn it, Lafayette, I'm in love. And he's like with the dude in jail.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry, I did skip one. So he basically goes to the police station. I don't know why I was fully unable to grasp that word. He goes to the police station. He finds the other guy from sort of Crystal's neighborhood. He wants to question him, even though all he's trying to do is actually like pretend to be a cop. And the guy clearly understands that he's not a real cop, and he's just, which of course doesn't mean that he couldn't massively abuse that position. And so he says, well, I've been off meth for like 2 days, so if you get me some meth in jail, then I will tell you something I know about Crystal. And it's like, Jesus Christ, it's just so terrible.
I feel like jail would be like the worst place to do meth, because like when you do meth, you want to like do stuff. you need stuff to like, you know, it's Adderall, like to the nth degree.
Right.
And you need to do stuff. And if you are in a cell with nothing, I could not imagine a worse kind of hell than being on meth in that situation. So, like, dude, no.
Yeah. Well, it's possible that that person, much like our dear Jason, does not always make the best decisions in his life.
I never would have thought that.
All right. Well, it's time for the weekly Let's Talk About the Sam Plot section. So Sam drives up to where he's been told the dogfighting ring is, and immediately the dude who's there is like, no, you seem like a cop. If you're not a cop, you're dodgy as fuck. Mm-hmm. Get the fuck out of here. So Sam decides the next best thing to do is to shift into a pit bull so that he can be captured. But he's not really captured, because he then just shifts back while still having a chain around his neck, which I'm like, at first I was like, surely he'd end up strangling himself. And then I was like, actually, that pit bull's neck is pretty thick.
Yeah.
So it might actually be thicker than Sam's neck.
Yeah, I 1,000% believe that for sure.
Yeah, go.
No, I was just gonna say, all of this is, I think, just really top tier Sam. You know, it's kind of amazing how much more I like him when he's not, you know, basing 90% of his personality on chasing after Sookie. But I just really love him kind of infiltrating the dogfighting ring. I love him saving all the dogs, because I was worried he was gonna kind of like narrow in, you know, like tunnel vision on the Tommy stuff, which would be kind of understandable, but he takes the time to save all the dogs. I love that he fucking finally like really tells Jolie off, although I would prefer if he turned back into a dog and fucking ate him. I love him offering his brother a safe place to go. Like, I think this is all really good Sam stuff. This is the most I've ever liked him.
Yeah, I think so much like we were sort of decrying the whatever the hell going on with Jason arcs, I do think the arc for Sam in season 2 with Daphne, where whatever happened at the end of that relationship and whoever, you know, wherever she was coming from originally, what she taught him to do was to accept himself and to not kind of hide who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it massively feels like someone who's like, again, like this is the sort of stuff Alan Ball loves playing with, right? But like someone who's come out and is therefore so much more comfortable in themselves and so much more confident therefore in the actions they take, and not like and he's generally, you know, calling bullshit where he sees bullshit, not prepared to take anything, and trying to create an opportunity and a second chance for people who deserve it. And,
I think you make such a good point, and it's like he is finally able to look outward instead of just inward. Like, so much of his life before was focused on like keeping to himself, not getting discovered, playing everything super close to the chest, you know, hiding all of his, you know, secrets from the law and everything. And now that he has let that go, he's able to kind of look at the world around him and pursue other things and try to help people.
Yeah. So good job, Sam. Well done. We approve. You are not at work and therefore you are not hitting on any of your staff.
Right. That also helps that there's no waitresses at his place of business for him to try to take advantage of.
Okay. Anything you want to say about Jason Hoyt or Sam and Fam?
I'm good.
Okay, let's go to Jackson, Mississippi, where some stuff is happening. So, Suki, Bill, Tara, and Alcide. So, if you'll recall, the cliffhanger from the last episode was Lorena. Did she actually bite Suki at the end of it? Or she
I think
just
so, yeah.
And then bites her.
I think she bites her.
Yeah. And anyway, so Bill somehow manages to get the jump, although he's been tortured for the last however many days and has silver all over him, manages to get the jump on Lorena, pulls her back on top of him with a silver chain around her neck so that Suki can then stake her. Yay! Dead person that we don't like. I think I was listening to yourself and Elise talking about episode 4 earlier, and you were like, Lorena just keeps coming back and it's really frustrating, and like we're not getting anything new from it, and she's just an annoying character now. And no longer.
Yeah. I also love that they made this just like because so many people that you do, I mean, not recently, but so many people do die in this show, and not every death can be just super extra. Otherwise it would just lose all effect at all. But I love that they made this one just one of the campiest fucking death scenes I've seen in this show so far, and that is a high bar. It's so good the way that it just like projectile blood vomit, like just it's excellent. It's good stuff.
I think this is a perfect time for you and I to talk about the difference in vampire deaths on this show versus in Buffy and Angel. Where in Buffy and Angel, they dust them, which was partially for production value reasons, because if you dust someone, you don't have to worry about a body lying around.
And Buffy was a mid-season replacement show, so they needed to keep that budget tight.
And it's just, obviously, it's a lot neater and it works a lot better for a, you know, for a network show and not an HBO show. But yeah, the difference between the cleanliness of Buffy's vampire killings and the gore of Truebird's vampire killings is glorious.
It's just the way that they just kind of collapse in on the, like they implode. It is disgusting and it's fun. It's so much fun.
It's so gloopy.
It's so
like,
gloopy.
The blood that the blood that they drink, like when vampires drink blood or share their blood, it's quite like liquidy bloody. It's so gloopy when they die. It's great. I love it.
Remember when Suki had some of God, what was his name? Long Shadow in her bra? Like she was picking pieces of him out. It's disgusting. It's great.
I believe wasn't Pam picking pieces?
I do think you're right.
Anyway, that's not the last death in this scene. So Debbie comes in with a gun, threatening them. Tara starts like thinking hard at Suki because you know Suki can hear her being like, "I'm gonna jump her," and Suki's trying to be like, "No, don't stop, wait." And Tara's just like hyped up and just fucking goes and does it anyway.
So these last,
because she's presumably still got Franklin's blood in her.
Oh yeah, yeah. I always forget that about that scene, is that she's like hopped up on V, like straight from the source. What I find interesting that I really like as like a plot thing moving forward is it seems like in the last couple episodes, Tara has. I mean. for so long, for her entire life, basically, Tara has been like, do not get in my head, stay out of my head. But now Tara is realizing that this is a tool. This is a really useful tool to be able to speak directly into Sookie's mind. And like other people are starting, I think Alcee did it too. Just people seeing it for not, you know, oh, look at Sookie, such a freak, but being able to see it as something that's really useful in situations like this.
Yeah, and you know, we've been we've certainly been talking enough about all of the traumas that particularly Tara, also Lafayette, but particularly Tara and the black characters on the show have to happen, and how we like being like, can they please get some wins? So, like, albeit in traumatic circumstances, Tara has had a couple of wins in the last couple of episodes, yeah. Which is like getting away from Franklin properly, and then being able to take down take the gun off of Debbie. Alcee gets the gun. Debbie starts making very stupid jokes. So
that, it's so lame. She walks in, it's like, oh, a vampire burrito. Oh, lowest hanging fruit. But also at that scene, and like Tara, this is another instance of Tara just like kind of speaking into her mind, but like Sookie just, and I always say that like I appreciate this about Sookie, is that she's got the balls to mouth off to anyone. You know, she'll walk up to fucking Eric Northman and slap him in the face. But sometimes she does it in situations like this where I just feel like it's so stupid when she's antagonizing someone with a gun who's pointing, like, Sookie needs to know, like a time and a place. Read the room. Like, this doesn't feel like this a situation where you're going to benefit whatsoever from talking shit to the person with a gun.
So I agree, but I think it's in character.
Oh, absolutely. And I think
the thing I love about Sookie is that she is very clearly related to Jason. Like, they're both absolute idiots. Yeah. Like, you kind of, like, forget that Sookie's an idiot because Jason's around so much and doing so much stupid things. But Sookie is, like, almost as bad as Jason.
She has zero self-preservation. Just doing. Instinct. Yeah.
And
yeah.
For both of them, getting away with shit because they're pretty.
Yes.
And they're like, and they're confident, and they, so I think like they're both terrible people, but they get away with it. Sookie is minorly less terrible than Jason, but like, yeah, it's crazy. You're what Sookie gets away with, and the show rewards her by always making it, well, mostly making her right or letting her get away with it. So yeah
well, you're right and you should say it, so yep.
anyway whilst Debbie is saying stupid jokes, Kuta comes around the corner and Alcee just shoots him in the chest, and we're like, all right, another one bites the dust.
Yeah, no, my notes here are just in all caps by Cooter, and that's exactly what I yelled out in that scene while I watched it. Could not be happier to see him go.
The thing that I just thought about was like, were they silver bullets, and as a werewolf, is he like gonna come back anyway? I can't remember.
I don't remember either. If he comes back or not. That's a good point though.
Yeah.
Something to keep in mind.
But yeah. So we may see Kuta again. But for now, he's dead. Debbie's crazy. Alcide doesn't seem particularly upset that he shot Kuta. but Debbie's sort of screaming bloody murder and vengeance at him. And because, I guess, I don't know, because he's still in love with her, he lets it go, and they all just jump into a van.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I get it. I understand why he didn't want to kill her. Even if he's not in love with her anymore, which I think at least a little bit of him is, but even if he wasn't, that's still somebody that he loved for a very long time. However, she definitely should have died. She's a massive liability, and she has threatened to go after him. And you know that it's not a huge leap that she would go through Sookie to get to Alcide, because Sookie is the vulnerable one. So yeah, that's, you know, we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, I think this is our classic, our heroes don't kill in cold blood situation. Right. It's however stupid it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, they drive away. Sookie decides to ride in the back with Bill, tries to give him some blood. Bill, of course, is basically half dead from all of the torture. And so he is not sensible and drinks way too much blood out of Sookie.
Yeah, again, Sookie is rivaling Jason here with the stupid fucking decisions, because feeding a half-dead vampire with zero supervision in the back of a van was one of the dumbest things that you could do. Like, you know that at the place that he was at, he was more animal than person. That was just very ill-advised to do that. Like, by all means, like, if you want to give him your blood, give him your blood. But, you know, controlled environment, safe environment. Don't martyr yourself for this fucking guy.
Yeah, and I think, like, all the other characters give Bill a lot of shit for this situation. And I kind of think that's harsh. Like, I think there are certainly plenty of time when you can give Bill shit. But, like, he's basically, you know, on the brink of death, and it has no concept of what's going
clearly
on.
Clearly not in control of himself as whatsoever. You
say, it's clearly no control of himself, and is, as you say, a kind of an animal state, and it's in the middle of the day, so, like, he's classic non-vampire. So, yeah. Anyway, Tara realizes something's going on, and goes back, opens the back of the van, finds the situation. Tara, not exactly always been a big fan of vampires, and unsurprisingly recently even less of a fan of vampires. So she kicks him out into the sun and then drives Sookie to the hospital. But Bill does not burn in the sun, and he starts looking at his hand going, what's occurring?
Hey guys, look how much fire I'm not on.
That is a reference to the superior Buffyverse show Angel.
Debatable, but it is a reference. Okay, that is,
but I'm gonna say the Pylea arc of Angel is peak Angel as well, so it's
so silly, but I that's one of my favorite lines and favorite David Boreanaz deliveries in that show. It's just good. Angel, when he's funny, he's very funny.
Agreed. And I think he kind of needs to be the brooding, boring guy in order to make, when he's being such a doofus, as much fun.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Yeah. But yeah. Anyway. Very quick tangent. What is your one true pairings for Buffy and or Angel?
For Angel, I really love Wes and Lila. And, you know what? For Angel as a character, I love Cordelia.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
A full 100% agreement with me on that one.
Yeah.
And I want no joy for anyone who's not Buffy. That seems harsh. No, Giles can have fun with that random British person that he was hooking up with later.
Olivia, later. Yeah. Although Olivia, I'm still sad about Giles and Jenny, RIP.
Jenny Calendar. Yeah.
They were a great couple.
Yeah. Yeah, and similarly, obviously Willow and Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was your Lozian Tasia talk about Buffy and Angel.
It's gonna happen every single. You guys can take your shot now.
You got to bear in mind that, like, at least once a season, it's just gonna be Tasia and I, and we're gonna line up our moon and stars to talk about Buffy and Angel. God, Anyway, so Suki gets to the hospital. They set up a blood transfusion, but she starts sort of flipping out and rejecting the blood. And it turns out that she doesn't have a blood type. And the hospital orders O negative, the universal donor, to which I say, that is what you give people when you don't know what blood type they are. Every hospital has shit tons of O negative.
Yeah.
That is the standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is insane. Jason is AB negative, which is a universal acceptor. And I know this because, hey, Jason, buddy, we are the same blood type.
Oh,
and
nice.
It is like a 0.05% of the population blood type. It's fucking weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
So...
So it's not fully the universal acceptor that's AB pos, but yeah, it's pretty close.
That's wow. That's amazing, actually. I didn't know that. I did have a thought about the O negative order, because I actually had the exact same thought during the episode, but then right after she said that, she said, but then I gave it to her and she had a reaction I've never seen before. So I think she meant I ordered it, as in like I ordered them to give her O neg.
Okay.
So all right. That's what I'm assuming, because she was like, so I ordered O negative, but then she started having a seizure, you know, so I thought like, well, you didn't wait for it yet.
All right.
So no, I thought the same though, but yeah.
That makes more sense, yeah. To be fair. Like, because it sounded like they were ordering it specially.
It absolutely did.
What the fuck did you
give her? Fucking ridiculous. Yeah. No, it totally did.
Yeah. Okay.
I did think because they say, oh, you know, Suki doesn't have a blood type. Who was it? Oh no, yeah, the hospital people were coming in because they're all thinking that Suki's gonna die. And so they're trying to talk to Jason about donating her organs. Like, my dudes, if she doesn't have a blood type, you cannot take her organs. She's not gonna be compatible with anybody. What is the point?
I feel like Alan Ball probably hasn't done a hospital show. Obviously, he's done a morgue show, but not a hospital show.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, it just stuck out. Like, there's no real reason to fixate on this blood type stuff, but they mentioned it so clearly, yeah, that it makes you just go, okay. Weird.
Yeah, it's like a whole like little plot point, and then they have somebody like 5 minutes later being like, donate her organs. You cannot do that. You made that very clear like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. So it's all a bit weird. Jason is being asked to be responsible, and his like response to being asked to be responsible is pretty like, oh my god, do not make me responsible. I am not responsible. This is a terrible idea. What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, when he's right, he's right. I loved the Jason and Suki moments here. I really love when they just get nice moments and they don't get a whole lot of them, where you really see that there is just like a very deep well of familial love there.
Yeah. And then it's the same as like Jason. What really flipped Jason out of the church was like them threatening
love for his sister. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, in the first season, he hit her off the back of like kind of accusing her of being responsible for Gran's death. But I think he's also definitely felt guilty about that, mm-hmm, and is trying to recover. So, anyway. Sorry, the blood type was a bit weird for me. If anyone's interested, and I'm sure you're not, but another character who does not have a standard blood type is Wolverine, whose blood type is E for Eternal. There you go.
Ooh.
Everyone learned something. Everyone learned something today.
I definitely did.
Anyway, Suki is in the meantime is in a coma and starts dreaming and meets Claudine. Claudine leads her out of the hospital to a sort of field set around a small pond with a lot of semi-naked people sort of frolicking and dancing, and gets her to refill her cup from a pond, which seems very much portentous and meaningful. She tells her that so Suki is scared of the water because from her perspective, water didn't kill her parents, and Claudine tells her that that's not what killed her parents. But before we get a chance to find out what did kill Suki's parents, they suddenly sense Bill's approach.
The darkness is coming.
In their words, the darkness is coming. And they sort of flee through the pond, trying to convince Suki to come with them, because Bill will steal her light.
Whatever could that mean?
Yeah. What could
the recently daywalking Bill?
The recently daywalking Bill, plus the sort of a couple of times Suki has used some sort of energy ball out of herself. So I think we might find out more later in this season.
Picking up some vibes, I can tell you that.
Anyway, go.
Yeah, so Bill the Darkness is approaching, and he does, and he comes in and he's, you know, saying his blood is the only thing that can fix her, and he's right. I understand why Tara wouldn't want Bill anywhere near Suki, even though he wasn't in his right mind when that happened. You know, emotions don't really work that way. So she doesn't want him anywhere near, but, like, you know, he's right, and he can save her, and he owes it to her to do so.
Did the band The Darkness ever make it over to the States?
Yes.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Anyway, so Bill believes in a thing called love. and so... Sorry, I always have to preface my jokes with pre-explanations.
I thought you were making a reference to Bill being The Darkness. And that reminded you of the band. But yeah, it all works.
Yes, it did. It all works out. So he he convinces Jason to let him give Suki his blood. I think, like, with Tara, it's a combination of what just happened, but also she's literally never trusted Bill. She never liked Bill. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that she's ever been able to shake that. So
And her opinions have kind of been, you know, justified by how she's been treated by another vampire, so.
Very much so. Yep. Very much so.
That's probably not changing anytime soon. But I guess we'll find out, huh?
I suspect not. All right. So in New Orleans and Shreveport, with Eric Hadley and Sophie Ann. Sophie Ann is in a birdcage.
I'm obsessed with this. It's so extra. Why? They could have locked her in a... No, I love the birdcage. I love it so much. It's ridiculous.
Like, 1,000,000% Sophie Ann has a birdcage.
Yeah. Like, that she just puts people in.
It absolutely fits with that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, actually, the interesting difference between Sophie Ann's residence and Russell Edgington's residence in that hers is obviously this sort of Art Deco palace type thing. Whereas, and this could be me completely misreading because I just don't know sort of US and particularly Southern architecture and types very well, but it feels like very plantation-y, Russell Edgington's.
Yeah.
It feels like that was deliberately chosen to indicate, like, the sort of person he is and the fact that he's probably been there owning slaves for hundreds of years, whereas Sophie Ann is a bit more nouveau riche, but not like that nouveau, because she's still a vampire who's years old. And
I think that's a really good point. And the fact that he's making allusions in this episode to the fact that he wants to essentially enslave the human race. So him having a plantation home is very on the nose.
Yeah, and I think, I can't remember if this was the previous episode or this episode, but we also get sort of like confirmation from Eric that the only reason he was sort of being subservient to Sophie Ann, even though he was quite a bit older than her was because of the sort of authority that she has as queen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still like working our way through vampire hierarchies and getting a little bit more information this episode and where that sort of comes from, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So Sophie Anne starts sort of asking Eric who he trusts, like, and Eric says the only vampire a vampire can trust is the one he made, which means that Eric missed the cold open of this episode. But so he, rather than his way of trying to then threaten Sophie Anne, is to basically start feeding on Hadley, which to me it felt like Sophie Anne was not going to tell him anything of him. She would have let Hadley die.
Mm-hmm.
But about Suki,
she would have been sad about Hadley, but she was gonna let it happen.
Yeah, but she was gonna let it happen, but Hadley basically tells him instead, and we get Eric in blood splattered sort of pale blue wool jumper knitwear going, well, I wasn't expecting that in a classic. We're not going to tell you quite yet what some of the characters know, but we will tell you by the end of the season, I think. That's pretty much it with those guys. Mm-hmm. We then go to the Magister and Pam. Oh, and Russell's here as well. Should have mentioned. So the Magister gets Pam some sterling silver earrings to continue to torture her, from Tiffany's no less, and he wants to because she's already got earrings, he wants to pierce her eyelids with them because he's a creep fucker.
Someone just can't let the Inquisition go.
Indeed, I
do love that that Pam, because Pam is so fucking cool just in every situation, but she's laying there being tortured and he's like, you know, how would you like it if I pierced your eyelids? And she's just like, yeah, absolutely. You know, she's just playing along with him, not giving him what he wants, which is fear, you know, crying, anything like that. She's just going along with it as if it's her idea. I love her so much.
She absolutely fucking rules. She's such a badass in this. I absolutely love it. Like when he says he's got her something from Tiffany's, and she's like, "Well, every girl finds out they're a Tiffany's girl."
Yeah,
and I do like the way they like don't spell out and leave the viewer to like at first to realize that if it's from Tiffany's, it's silver, and that's what he's got her, and that's what it's part of. Yeah. Anyway, Eric, Sophie Anne, and Russell show up. Eric confesses what happened with selling the V. And so the Magister starts saying, well, I'm going to arrest you or arrest Sophie Anne, or I don't know. I lost track of who he's going to arrest. Anyway, Russell is basically like, you seem to be missing what's happening here, which is that I'm staging a coup and you're going to marry me to Sophie Anne because we're going to merge our kingdoms. And the Magister's like going, the authority won't allow that and I won't do it. Russell continues to be like, my dude, you are not getting what is happening. You're not getting the situation you're in, and you're not getting that I don't give a fuck about the authority.
Just Russell consistently just in every episode being the campiest. He's always having more fun than everyone else, and the actor is having more fun than everyone else, and it is just so much fun to watch. So much fun to be in a room with him, even as he's menacing, even more when he's menacing. The way he's toying with the Magister, I will just eat it. I will eat out of his hand.
I do love it. I think I said this before, but I love how they continue to make the vampires in this show scary. Like, even the ones we like Eric and Bill to an extent, mm-hmm. like, Bill can be scary. Eric can be terrifying.
You always have that sense of danger with them, which is, I think, really important. Otherwise, it does get too silly. And then if they lose their threat, then what are you doing? There's no conflict.
And exactly. And then you've got, like, the vampires we don't like, where with, like, Russell and the Magister. The Magister's a little bit one note in his sort of, like, as you say, creepy Inquisition torturer guy. But, like, Russell is, like, just sort of capricious, you know, not to mention something else that come out, but, like, fey in the true sense of the word fey. And Sophie Anne is, you know, just bubbling below the surface. And I think it's, like, it's what set off the serenity of Godric compared to the rest of them, and how he's sort of moved kind of beyond that. But yeah, I continue to adore the characterization of the vampires on this show, and how scary they are, and how that threat continues to be there. Anyway, so the Magister rejects Russell. So Russell basically frees Pam, ties the Magister to the table. We get a truly wonderful line from Pam, who's basically like taunting. Sorry, a wonderful line from Eric. Pam is taunting the Magister, saying, "Well, you know, you can dish it out, but you can't take it." And Eric's line is, "Let's see how this plays out, Pam. We can always taunt later," which also feels like the sort of thing that Russell would say to Talbot.
Yeah. At the same time. Eric is he's so just intelligently pragmatic. Like, he is always going, he's always going to play his cards close to his chest. He's always going to wait to read the temperature of the room before making a decision. Unlike Ding Dongs, like Sookie and Jason and Bill, where they just kind of fly off the handle and they do what, you know, like, this is the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it. Eric plays it so much smarter than that, and that's why he stays on top.
And I do think that is, like, the Godric sort of influence in him in terms of that.
We do see that in flashbacks, too, with him kind of tempering Eric's, like, violence or his, you know, his desire for action.
And really, we've only really seen Eric worked up twice. Once with Godric and once with Pam, I feel like.
Oh, he loves.
He loves, yeah. Anyway, so under torture, the Magister marries Russell and Sophie Anne. And they celebrate this by air kissing, which was fucking hilarious.
This is the gayest hetero marriage I've ever seen in my life, and I'm obsessed with it. I love it so much.
Yeah. It's so funny. Russell then starts just ranting about taking the world back from humans, and that the authority has abdicated their authority. Anyway, Eric says basically, "Let's just leave," and Russell's like, "All right, fine," and then just sort of Columbos and goes, "Oh, just one more thing," and cuts the Magister's head off. And the Magister's head, sort of open mouth, does this sort of loop-de-loop spin. And then he gloops everywhere. So he dead.
Rest in shit. Guy sucks. Yeah, and what like a miserable existence that guy had, where his entire life was just meting out punishment. I mean, obviously he was thrilled, but gross. Come on.
Yeah. So anyway, that was our cliffhanger. So we need to rank
the cliffhangers.
So we we are ranking every cliffhanger in True Blood. We have ranked 29 so far. Number one is Grant is Dead from episode 105. Number 29 is Godric Rescue Sookie, which was like the fourth least good cliffhanger in that episode from episode 7. So what are we thinking of here? I think I feel like we're relatively high up, like top third, maybe. Like a couple of episodes we had Bill death becoming her hate fucking Lorena. Feels like maybe around that sort of area. What do you think?
Let's see. Bill death becomes her hate fucks Lorena. I think this is the first time I read this description of that. That was funny. Yeah, let's. I'm comfortable anywhere between 9 and 11.
Yeah, so I think I would put this below the Bill and Lorena thing just because that was so fucking silly.
Yeah. And it was just, oh my god, the twisting her head around. Oh.
Yeah.
So good. That sounds good.
Okay, so this is our new number 11, which is episode 307, Russell kills the Magister, or cuts the Magister's head off. And I'll type that in. Danger. Okay, character intros. We had Claudine, who's sort of seems a little bit ethereal and a little bit dancey and drinking water and bunch of excuse for a True Blood to an HBO to have some titties around the pond, basically.
Titties around the pond. New band name, I'm calling it.
Anything else? We don't get a lot of Claudine and we don't really get an explanation of who she is, but she clearly knows something about Sookie and she knows something about Sookie's family.
Yeah. She seems to imply that Sookie belongs with them, that this is her area, potentially.
Yes, so I think more to come from Claudine and that part of Sookie later.
Yeah.
Okay, what is most chaotic in this episode?
I'm with you on this one.
Yeah, it's Russell. Mm-hmm. Russell's ranty enslaved the humans, and then his air kissing after getting married, and then his no, I can't let this go, and completely decapitating the Magister is perfection. Well done.
Yeah, a delightful, well done, menacing chaos at all times, and it's great. It's just it makes him just a perennially watchable character.
Yeah, he's great. For what's most horny, I have this down as like possibly the least horny episode of True Blood, certainly in a while. Anything that stood out for you?
The whole like little realm that Sookie was in her coma, her little coma realm. I think there were pretty horny vibes there, but yeah, like you said, nothing really. It was background horny, and what's background horny for a show like True Blood? You know, it's nothing.
It's just a bunch of tits.
It's basically just titties around the pond.
Yeah, it's like the vanilla version of all of the Marianne orgy stuff.
Season.
Yeah, the only other thing I'd call out is Jason for Summer's Biscuits at the beginning and him trying to convince Hoyt to get married because Summer brought biscuits. So, yeah. Okay, spoilers and books. Any sort of spoiler booky stuff that you think's worth bringing up?
No, I got nothing this time.
All right. Well, anything else then to say for the episode?
No, I think we did it.
Yeah, three characters died. Bye bye Magister. Bye bye, possibly, probably Kuta. Bye bye Lorena. Not going to miss any of you. next time you can take a few others along with you, but I don't care either. Sam's plot, like, Sam continues to be a good boy, but I don't really care about his plot. Jason continues to be insane, and I don't really care about his plot either. But yeah.
Yeah, Jason's plot, I think, definitely ranks lowest for me right now. It's
yeah.
I'm not enjoying any bit of it, any part of it.
Yeah, we didn't get any Jessica this episode either. So be interesting to see where that goes. All right. Would you like to tell all the lovely people where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram mostly, at Ragey Cakes. And you can find my occasionally posting YA podcast, Act Your Age, on Instagram and all the other places.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at Lozymandias. You can find my other podcast, The Asimovcast, at Looking for Joy and Inspiration in the Works of Isaac Asimov at Asimovcast on Blue Sky and Instagram. I'm somewhere in between mid-season 2, having finished up the first set of Foundation books, starting the others. And I also guested on Elise's Podwraith Star Trek Deep Space Nine pod recently, which was nice. A lot of fun. All right. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme. I feel like we haven't given that theme enough love recently, so I want to repeat how much it fucking rules. Thank you very much. You can find the pod on Instagram and Blue Sky at FangbangersPod with a Z. Email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. I'm Lozzie, and my blood type is... well, I already said it's AB negative, but specifically in this episode, it is Sophie Anne in a birdcage.
Yes. I'm Tasia, and my blood type is smart enough to get depressed.
Huh.
Womp womp.
Bye. Bye.